Well, just looking, I think we've got almost a perfect setup for a lot of volatility, and that's running through both equity market prices and also through bond yields as well. And the reason for that is you've still got some strength running through economic data. And if anything, it's improved a bit in the United States. So you've got some underpinnings there. Whenever you get the falls, you get the bounce backs that run through risk assets because of that. And just some of that data that came out last week, whether you're looking at durable goods orders, that beat market expectations by quite a margin for August, up 1.8%, market swing for 0.7%, or whether it's key leading economic indicators. And on Friday, we had the ISM manufacturing PMI came out. It's gone back above 60. Now, that was a big surprise. It actually has gone up from 59.9 to 61.1, and so it's right back in really strong territory. And September Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey coming out on Friday bounced up. Not a lot, but it went up to 72.8 from 71.0. And things like personal spending, we had August personal spending numbers came out. It was way stronger than expected, 0.8%. That's up from 0.3% the month before. So you've got some spending power which is running through the U.S. economy. And, things like pending home sales, right at the leading edge of housing activity, they were expected to rise by 1.3%. They rose by 8.1%. So, to say a second wind's coming through is an understatement in terms of these numbers. They really are showing some power. But that's not to say that you haven't got a huge number of headwinds for the U.S. as well. So, we also had pretty hawkish commentaries coming out of the Fed, including out of Fed Chairman Powell over the course of the past week, indicating that they're going to be bringing forward basically when they start to raise interest rates. So you've got that pressure point. You've got the president who's at war with his own party at the moment over key pieces of legislation relating to both hard infrastructure spending. That's the $55 billion bill, $550 billion bill that relates to new roads and all these sorts of bits and pieces, as well as the soft infrastructure bill, which relates to social security and welfare changes there. And it's not the Republicans are against him, it's his people in his own party who he's having a problem getting this through Congress. He can get it through the Senate, which he doesn't hold, but he's got his own people who are going against him in the Congress. And at the same time, you've got the debt ceiling, which we had Janet Yellen, who's the Secretary of Treasury these days, is Treasury Secretary these days, pointing out, it's going to hit, and you've got to find new ways of working their way through that as they move ahead too. So you're going to get sort of these conflicting news stories from time to time. But remembering that the underlying economy in the U.S. is almost bulletproof. It's still moving along very strongly. You get these periods where things pull back, but you're going to get the rises as well. And as I say, it really is set up for quite a deal of volatility. This week at the U.S., key numbers, we saw the manufacturing PMI, ISM PMI, last week. It was strong. We've got the ISM non-manufacturing PMI coming up on Tuesday night. That was at 61.7, going back to the month of August, is expected to still be above 60 for the most recent month, so another one of those strong leading indicators. And then right at the end of the week, of course, we run towards non-farm payrolls. And this was one of those numbers which was on the softer side, going back for the month of August. Back in June and July, we had non-farm payrolls, which were in the 900,000 to low millions for the 2 months. They fell back in the month of August to only 235,000. It's a complete surprise. Market's expecting a rather stronger number, 460,000, when that number comes out for the month of September. And one of the other factors that comes out with that is average hourly earnings. And this speaks to the inflation story. It's we're getting numbers which run 0.4 to 0.6% a month for average hourly earnings, and it's expected to be another 0.4% reading for the month of September. if that's where it comes in, the annual growth in average hourly earnings will lift from 4.3% to 4.6%. So in the case of the US, it's not just a case that you've got supply chain problems which are leading to inflation pressure, particularly at the factory gate. And it was interesting in that manufacturing PMI that prices paid went up to a record high of 81% of respondents saying they're having to pay higher prices for just about everything. So yeah, it's this inflation pressure point which is putting pressure back to central banks. So this is another one of those factors we'll watch with those numbers that come out this week. The unemployment rate number that comes out this week with that is expected to come down to 5.1% from 5.2%. Out of China last week, China obviously is going through all manner of difficulties, and it's not really the economic numbers which are the focus of attention at the moment. It's policy changes in China, particularly those relating to containing the steel industry to make the place greener, the problems relating to the property development part of the economy. It accounts for over a quarter of Chinese GDP, and of course Evergrande is still a rumbling problem with its potential for default. How the Chinese deal with that is an issue which is running through as well. Next week, we have their national holidays, which relate to the celebration of when they became the People's Republic of China, and so a lot of chess beating will be occurring in China, a lot of it military oriented too, over the course of this next week. And one of the stories that went through last week was a record number of Chinese military plane incursions over Taiwan. So all sorts of things which are swirling in the orbit of China at the moment, which bear watching. The economic numbers, for what they're worth, came through, if anything, a little bit better than expected. So we had the September manufacturing PMI came out. It did go below 50, but to 49.6 from 50.1. That was the official one. But the more reliable cakes in manufacturing PMI went the other way and went up from 49.2 to 50. So that, if anything, was a surprise, a positive surprise. The services sector PMI was a big surprise too. A month before, it collapsed and went down to 47.5. We thought it'd be in the 40s. It actually went roaring above 50 again to 53.2. So again, a sign of some strength running through there. And in terms of data this week, we've only really got the cakes in services sector PMI coming out on Friday this week. So a lot of these public holidays for Chinese celebrations in the early part of the week. It was 46.7 last month. If anything, given what happened with the official services sector PMI, that may bounce well above 50 as well. In Australia last week, quite a bit of data coming through, and we had August retail sales, they fell, but less than expected. It's really interesting that this softness that we're looking for in Q3 GDP is certainly going to be a negative number, but maybe not quite as negative as many people are anticipating. Retail sales fell 1.7% in the month of August. They were expected to fall by 2.4%. They were down 2.7% the month before. But the important point about these numbers is nowhere near as weak as they were when we had the lockdowns going back last year, running in that first part of the COVID crisis. They're not quite as weak as might be expected. Similar story too for August quarter job vacancies numbers came out from the ABS last week. Didn't get a lot of coverage. It should have got more than it did. You would have expected that this survey was taken 6 weeks into the New South Wales lockdowns and several weeks into the Victorian lockdowns. You would have thought that job vacancies would have totally collapsed. They didn't. They came down, but 9.8% for the quarter. They're still up 61.8% year on year. Now, that is still very, very strong. So it's an indication that as we get out of these lockdowns, we've still got quite a bounce back, which is going to come through. Similar story for August home building approvals too. These were expected to fall again, you know, because of the lockdowns and the lack of support now coming through from government for new home building. The market consensus was they would fall by 5%. They rose by 6.8% and are up 31.2% year on year. So a fair bit of strength there running through the home building approvals, and it was pretty evenly split between home units and freestanding homes. We had August credit came out. This is continues to move along pretty well. It was up 0.6% month on month after being up 0.7% the month before. So this is the stock of credit. And then right at the leading edge of it, we had housing finance. Now, this is a bit different. And this one's starting to show perhaps the beginnings of a potential softening for the housing market. It's coming through on the owner-occupier side. Owner-occupier housing finance commitments suffered their biggest fall since May last year. They were down by 6.6%. Still up 33.5% year on year, but a couple of months ago those were up over 80% year on year. Investors though still running, and so investor housing finance commitments were up 1.5% month on month, were up 92.2% year on year. In total, the value of housing finance commitments fell 4.3% month on month. Now remembering that this is running into a period now where if anything, particularly on the fixed rate home loans, there's a slight drift upwards in rates being charged. And at a time where APRA appears to be on the brink of introducing some new macroprudential controls in order to cap out housing. And it's that housing issue and the housing price issue which will probably form much of the discussion in the half-yearly financial stability review released by the Reserve Bank this coming Friday. This is where the Reserve Bank itself can't avoid talking about the issue. It tends to duck it when it's going through monetary policy statements. But in terms of financial stability, it will look at this in quite some detail. So that's a report that's going to be well worth looking at when it comes out on Friday, what the Reserve Bank, with a hint towards the group of regulators who look at housing, may be doing next in terms of the housing issues. We get some other data too. This morning we'll get ANZ job ads coming out. They were down by 2.5% last month. If anything, we'll probably be down again for the most recent month. On Tuesday, we get international trade in goods and services. We had a huge trade surplus of $12.1 billion going back to the month of July. Now, that's due to peel back because, one of the factors is just what's been happening to iron ore prices, and it's our single biggest export. Obviously, during the month of August, running into September, we had some pretty impressive falls in the iron ore price. There's been some recovery over the most recent period, but at that time, this should reflect into some weaker exports. The other thing that's worth stressing is it's more or less an isolated thing. Iron ore prices, because they're so important to us, we focus on those and they have been weak. Just about every other commodity price has been relatively strong, including things like coal prices have been very, very high. And of course, be well aware that at the moment there's the mother and father of an energy shortage and rising prices in several areas of the world, including parts of Europe and also in China. And so, we've got some fast escalating energy prices in many parts around the world. So it's not all bad news on Australian exports, but we should expect that the trade surplus won't be quite as high as it's been in the past. We've got the RBA on Tuesday as well. That's before the financial stability review. This week, this is just their normal monetary policy change. There won't be any change. They've already spoken about they're back to buying $4 billion worth a month, a week of securities. There'll be no change to that. They said there's likely to be no change to that till at earliest February next year. And of course, there'll be no change on interest rates. The other central bank we should watch this week, though, is the RBNZ. And the RBNZ, in their meeting this week, is touted to lift their interest rates, and they will be raising interest rates from 0.25% to 0.5%. They'll join the Norwegian Central Bank, that's one of the first to lift interest rates in the developed world. There is this trend of some of these central banks breaking ranks now and starting to raise rates because of the inflation problems which are happening. In Europe last week, the data is good, but with an inflation edge on it. And so, for example, in Europe we had the business and consumer survey. It actually rose to very strong, 117.8 from 117.5. We also had the unemployment rate, which came down another notch to 7.5% from 7.6%. But we also had the September CPI came out for Europe, and it's lifted from 3% to 3.4%. So this is very high on a headline basis. Of course, they tend to look at the underlying inflation rate and the so-called HICP, excluding food and energy. That one lifted too, from 1.6% to 1.9%. These are starting to produce quite a bit of pressure. And inside the EU part of Europe, but in some of the peripheral countries, like that are no longer in the EU, places like the UK, energy shortages now adding to supply chain difficulties and are really boosting inflation. In the case of the UK, it's petrol, which is almost unobtainable and is being offered at ridiculously high prices, plus also diesel, which of course goes, and the cost of transporting goods around the country now has tripled over this past year. Much of the reason for that is that they no longer have continental truck drivers who on their shifts into the UK provide some capacity. So, and we've got some problems of gas supply in Europe, which are driving up prices too, together with everything else that's going up in price. So a lot of big pressure points there starting to build on the inflation front for Europe, which will bear watching over time too. Europe this week, we have Centix Investor Confidence. That comes out on Monday. It's expected to come back to 18.6 from 19.6. Still a strong reading. A key one, August producer prices in Europe come out on Tuesday. These are prices at the factory gate, and it's expected to lift again. And the year-on-year change is expected to rise from already just a catastrophic 12.1% year-on-year to 13.5% year-on-year. I think it's fair to say that the markets are in a daydream at the moment. They're just not watching just how much pressure is building in pipeline inflation all the way around the world. And so I'm becoming more and more concerned that we will see significant, not just volatility, but when we get the upside changes in bond yields, they're way bigger than most people are anticipating, I think. We're not in the same category in terms of some of the pressure points that are around the world at the moment, but we can't avoid them. So if we get these periodic large shifts upwards in bond yields, of course they're going to reflect back into our market, regardless of what the Reserve Bank's trying to do in terms of keeping interest rates lower for longer. So just watching these pressure points on the inflation front very, very carefully over the course of this month. But I just stress that the way things are moving, with the differences between the strength in the data, the inflation rates, and some of the problems which are developing around the world, we should expect considerable volatility.